So I want to wish everybody Chodesh Tov. And I want to tell you, I'm excited for this Zman. This is going to be an incredible 6 weeks. I think some of you already gotten a taste just from the last couple of days. And I'd like to dedicate this year. Tonight is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzedek Livracha, Yahrzeit, our Rebbe Rosh Yeshiva. I think it's pretty safe to say this yeshiva wouldn't exist if it hadn't been for Gush and Lichtenstein and Rav Amital. Significant portion of the Rebbeim here learned in Gush. What the Jewish world lost when Rav Lichtenstein went to Yeshiva Shel Mala is indescribable. And it was one of the great privileges of my life to have the schut, the privilege to learn Torah from him. And I will tell you, although this isn't, you know, when people speak of Rav Lichtenstein and the genius, it took me years. I remember in Shana Aleph, he would give a minhag in Gush was there was shir kali every week on Tuesday afternoon. Mincha was at 3, if I'm not mistaken, and 3:15, everybody would sit down. There'd be like a hush that settled over the Beis Medrash. You know, if you've never been to visit the Gush Beis Medrash, I encourage you to go. It's a powerful place. Hundreds and hundreds of boys sit there and learn. And there's just like a quiet. And 1 week would be Rav Amital, and 1 week would be Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein were very different in many, many ways. And Rav Lichtenstein believed that Torah doesn't have a time limit. Like, the shiur's over when the sikh is done. Like, if that's an hour, if it's 3 hours, whatever it might be. He had the capacity and the ability to create multiple dimensions and possibilities. If there's a four-way machlokas in the Gemara between, I don't know, you know, four different Tanaim, A, B, C, and D, well, if you follow A, then that would mean that the Rashba would mean this, and Tosfos would mean that, and Rashi would mean this, and but if you follow B, then you'd have to say differently from Rashba, and you'd have to say that the Rambam would be saying the following. And of course, if you anticipate following C, and he would go through these possibilities, then he would say, well, why would A not hold according to B? Why would B not hold? By the time you were done with the shiur, 2.5 hours later, there was something like 64 different possibilities. And they were all in his head. He had this flow chart in his mind. And imagine coming into Shana Aleph and trying to follow a shiur like that in Hebrew. So, you know, within 10 minutes, I mean, I was done. You know, I had to do Netil Sirdayim at the end of the shiur. Let's put it that way. It took me really until Shana Hay to be able to follow an entire shiur of his from start to finish. I finally figured out that the best way to do that would be to find someone who was the Shana Aleph guy that I was back in Shana Aleph and offer to give it over to him. And after a while, there was like a group of guys that I would get together and it forced me to listen, to take the right notes and do Chazara. And that's really where I started to discover the value of Chazara. And that's what most people talk about when they talk about Rav Lichtenstein, his mind and the Torah. And you know, I've shared some of the thoughts from some of his Sfarim with you. But there's another aspect to Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein was an incredibly shy person. And I realized when I was in Shana Hay that I had really no relationship with him. He knew who I was. I certainly knew who he was. But I'd never really had a conversation with him, except for maybe the rare occasion where I had a question that I somehow got up the courage to ask, right? And that really bothered me. So I came up with an idea. I'm sure I must have told you the story, but I came up with the idea that maybe I would ask to catch a ride with him. You know, we had in Gush we had shiur on Fridays, or at least what Fijian did. And he would finish shiur, 10:30, 11, whatever it was. And then after that, he had an office to Rabbi Natan shiur, which must be recorded somewhere. They were amazing shiurim if you can find them. Avot to Rabbi Natan follows Pirkei Avos in the Gemara. And it's basically Rabbi Natan's sort of recipe for ethics without going too deep into it. And at the end of the shiur, when I was Rabbi Natan, he would drive back to Yerushalayim if he wasn't there for Shabbos. So I got up the courage and I asked him if I could have a ride with him to drive, you know, with a Rav. He said, sure. So I got a ride with him. Now, I was expecting I'd be in the car. There'd be 3-4 guys. One of them would be an older guy. They'd ask a great question, you know. It was just me and him. I was sitting in the front. He was sitting there. He drove. Now, I didn't have the courage to ask Lichtenstein a question. I'd even thought of a question. I certainly wasn't going to ask him a question in Gemara, even if I'd come up with one, because I'm sure he would say, well, I don't understand the question. Didn't you see the Tosfos and the Bava sign? So, like, I wasn't going to ask any question. So, back then, the ride was much longer. It was a circuitous road, and it took an hour. We spent an hour in one of the most uncomfortable silences I've ever experienced in my life. I know what to do with myself. We get to Yerushalayim, and I thanked him very much for the ride. And off he drove. And I spent the rest of the day sort of thinking about what a fool I was. I had an hour with a Ruchnitzin, and I didn't do anything with it. So I decided I was going to do it again the next week. But this week, I'll prepare myself. You know, I'll make sure I own the sugya backwards and forwards. I'll find a question that I can ask him. That's a good question. Maybe I'll look up a Rabbi Akiva Eger question. I don't remember what I did. And I'll have a good question. So I asked him again the next week if I could have a ride. Sure enough, he says yes. Sure enough, I'm in the front seat, the two of us. So now I wait the appropriate amount of time and say, can I ask Rabbi a question? Sure. And we had this amazing discussion. And then we finished and he answered the question, you know, after about 20 minutes. Now we're sitting in the car and we're just kind of driving for another uncomfortable 40 minutes. It took me, I started doing this every week, and eventually he sort of warmed up. I mean, he must have figured out what I was doing. Got to the point where if he had a meeting, he would come over to me after Shia and say, I'm not going straight in, but if you want to wait, I'll come find you, you know, whatever. And eventually, kind of the hair came down. This wouldn't be the appropriate appellate for him for other reasons, but I'm going to go to Gannon for that one. But I started to have conversations with him. And I remember once we were driving down a particular area in Yerushalayim and he was reminiscing about when he was younger and there was a particular story there, whatever. And I realized like I'd gotten to a point where I had a kesher with him. It took a lot of work. Sometimes what you want to accomplish is ishtadlus. Like, I mean, I wanted to have a relationship with him and it took a lot of work to develop a relationship with him. Okay. But sometimes it's not about what you do. It's about what Hashem plans. It's clear that it's not what you do. Now, if you ask me, was I meant to be in Gush? I would say, well, yeah. And I actually took a ride with Rav Riskin. I remember it was on the way to Birkas HaChama. And he asked me what I was doing. And I said, I'm going to Keren Biavne. And he said, well, why are you going to Keren Biavne? And I said, well, you know, I have a few friends and they're going to Keren Biavne. And I like that we're good friends. So we're all going to go to Keren Biavne together. And he said, no, you should go to Gush. That's what he said to me. And I said, oh, okay. And I asked him why, and he gave me an answer, which I won't repeat on tape. And there's nothing to do with Keren Biavne, it's to do with me and my friends. And so I said, okay, I'll go to Gush. Like, it wasn't like today where you go and you check out the yeshivas and there's a website. If your Rebbe says go to Gush, say go to Gush. I went to Gush, changed my life. I was meant to be in Gush. How do I know? Because I was in Gush, right? But then there are moments, right? But I wouldn't have known that at the time. I thought that, you know, I had this decision and I made it soon. Then there are moments where it's so clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world and that he's planned this. And I'll give you an example. Some of you may remember that I was in a Sparrow's Pizzeria the summer of 2001. It was August 9th, the 20th of Av, my other birthday. And it's a longer story that we're not going to tell now, but I have a vivid memory of walking into that pizzeria. It was about, I don't know, 10 to 2 in the afternoon, quarter to 2. I'd gotten hungry. I was walking through town towards the old city to clear out my office, which used to be over there, because I was going on Shlichut a few days later to Florida. And I was waiting in line at the counter, and I ordered a baked ziti. And while I was waiting for them to make the baked ziti, you know, I was kind of looking around. You know how, like, you go into a restaurant, you scope out which table you want to sit at, and that becomes your table while you're waiting in line. And nobody else can touch the table because that's where I'm going to sit. And then the baked ziti comes, and I never do this. I really don't. My wife makes fun of me. I'm the guy who gets a raw steak and just eats it because I don't want to embarrass the waiter. For some reason, I touched the baked ziti. It was cold. So I said to the waitress, like, would you mind, like, heating it up? She gets hit by it. So she starts heating up the baked ziti. And I'm waiting for the big Z to be heated up in the pizza oven, whatever. And there's a girl who walks in with her mom. The girl must have been around 6 years old. And they're standing next to the table where I'm going to sit, my table. And this girl starts having a temper tantrum. A temper tantrum like only a 6 year old screaming. Like everybody in the place, I mean, there must have been 60, 70 people in the front of the Sparrows. It's like, you know, this is just not what you want to come have a pizza over. And so I made this mental decision, too much going on. I'll go sit in the back. There was like a few steps up to sit in the back. That 6-year-old temper tantrum saved my life. I know exactly what happened to the woman who ended up sitting at that pizza table. She left this world about 20 minutes later, 10 minutes later. And then the woman behind the counter says to me, you know, you don't have to wait here. Just tell me where you're sitting, and I'll have somebody bring you the big city when it's ready. I said, wow, okay, great. So I took the cheesecake that I'd gotten, because my wife wasn't with me, and the diet doesn't matter when your wife isn't with you. And I went and sat in the back. I'll take good. I went and sat in the back. A couple minutes later, this guy shows up in a Sparrow's outfit, you know, with my big ziti. And then I see he's talking to someone. That big ziti saved his life. For sure. He happened to be sitting a little to the left of where the steps were, which meant that there was a wall behind me, behind which were the pizza ovens, which saved my life. And at exactly 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I remember I was reading a book by Jim Collins called Built to Last. It's a fascinating book. I guess it worked. And the largest bomb that had ever been blown up as part of a suicide bombing to date in Israel, this guy walked in, apparently was in a guitar case. I later obviously read up a lot on this, and apparently he screamed out, Allahu Akbar, which is that God is great, but I didn't hear it. I was in the back room. It was the single largest explosion I've ever heard in my life. Mind you, I've been under artillery fire. Nothing like this. And 15 people were killed, including Malki Roth. Hannah Nechenberg is a vegetable to this day from that event, lying in a home. And 60 people were wounded. It was a horrific, horrific event. And I won't repeat the things that I saw. Just to give you one example, there was a girl whose body was missing for about 8 hours. They finally found that she was blown up into the chimney until they found her. One of the pizza ovens, this massive pizza, was blown out onto the street. Right? So why am I sitting here? I'm sitting here because Hashem sent a 6-year-old girl to have a temper tantrum. That's it. Right? Is it all a plan? Or are we meant to do something with it? You know? And I'll tell you just one last story, because we have these stories all the time. We just don't always notice them. But sometimes Hashem, he doesn't just like, you know, drop a penny so that you have a, you know, the extra money that you need for the bus. Sometimes he sends a telegram, and sometimes, you know, there's somebody on a loudspeaker. And I think I told you once a story about the first time I was ever, really the only time I was ever under sniper fire. And the guy next to me ended up lying down, back to the ground, in a hole in the side of his head. And it took me a minute to realize that whoever was targeting us, actually from the minaret of a mosque, 250, 300 yards away, must now be trying to hit me. We were 2 officers walking through a field, you know, whatever. And of course, later, and that's a longer story. If I didn't tell it to you and you want to hear it, you can come to Q&A afterwards. But later, I thought a lot about that. As we were leaving the tanks, because we were working on the tanks, and then we were going to go back to the mess tent for breakfast. One of the guys dropped a maftech kis. Maftech kis literally means a pocket key, but it's this massive wrench that weighs like 20, 30 pounds for whatever, to work on the tanks. And he dropped it off the tank, and I was right there. So he said, Slicha, and I said, oh, okay, no problem. And I picked it up and gave it to him. And because I picked it up and gave it to him, and the way we were walking, I ended up walking on the left, and the samach that I was with ended up walking on the right. Now, if he hadn't dropped that maftech kis, then I actually would have been on the right, and he would have been on the left. And then, I guess the sniper would have hit me. So, Hashem sent this guy to drop this maftech kis so that I could be walking on the left. And life is like that, in every minute. And of course, this raises an interesting question, which we're going to get into in a minute. So why do I share this with you here at the beginning of Parsha? It's actually a double Parsha. Purposely decided to speak about a theme that is found in both Parshiyot, Tazria Matzara. The Pasuk says, right, Negatzarat, right? This is in Chumash. This is in Perek Yigimel Pasuk Bet, right? By Daber Hashem El Moshe V'El Aaron Limor. Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aaron. This time it's pretty obvious why Aaron is included. Adam ki yeh ba'or b'saro se'eto sapachat ova'eret v'ya ba'or b'saro l'negat tzara'at v'uva l'aron ha'koreinu l'echad mi'banav ha'koni. Somebody who has the affliction that we call tzara'at, se'eto sapachat, we're not going to get into the details, right? There are four different types of marot. There are really shtaim shein arba, whatever. So he has some sort of an affliction. And when he gets this affliction, so he's taken to the Kohen, right? Now, first of all, what is tzaraat? I'll tell you what tzaraat is not. Tzaraat is not leprosy. So we may use the word leprosy sometimes because maybe it's close to what tzaraat was in some ways, but that's not what leprosy is, and that's not what tzaraat is, right? Leprosy, by the way, is an affliction that can be contagious. Tzaraat is not contagious, at least according to Chazal, right? So what is tzaraat? Well, tzaraat is some form of whitening. There's a certain patch of skin which is discolored, white, yellow, whatever. There are four basic marot, four basic visions of how it looks. If there's two white hairs in it as opposed to one hair, there's this blot, this affliction on your skin. There are three types of negayim. You can have one on your skin, on your person. You can have one on your clothing. And you can have one on your house, on the wall of your house, right? And if you see this, something's wrong. Something is off balance. So you go to the Kohen. And the Kohen has to decide if you have tzaraat, and therefore if you're pure or impure. Now, what's interesting is, why does the tzaraat come? So the Rambam makes this very clear. The Rambam in Hilchos 2, where would I find the halachos of tzaraat? In Sefer, in the Rambam. Tara, right? Good, okay? Right, because this is all about purity and impurity. So there's a section in Tara called the laws of Tumat Tzaraat, right? The impurity of Tzaraat. And if you look in Perek Tetvav, right, the 15th chapter of Tumat Tzaraat, fascinating stuff, by the way. Halacha Yud, Ted Zayin, 16. So, Loven or Hadam Karui Tzaraat, a whitening of the skin is called Tzaraat. It's an interesting question, whitening of skin, whitening of hair. Why do you think, when you see a person's hair become white, what do you know about him? He's getting older. He's getting closer to death, right? When you look at grass, and the grass turns yellow or white, what does it mean? The grass is dying, right? So white on a person's body is a symbol of death. And there's a message here that maybe the life you've been giving is not being utilized properly. And if you're given a gift and you don't use it properly, then you don't deserve the gift. You don't deserve to live anymore. Now, what would give you such a serious reaction? So the Rambam says, right? The Pasuk says, "Hishamer b'nega tzaraat zchoreter asher asa Hashem Elokecha l'Miriam baderech." Be careful of tzaraat. Remember what happened to Miriam. Now, what happened to Miriam? Miriam was punished with tzaraat. Why was she punished with tzaraat according to Chazal? Because she spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Now, reminding you that there are three types of forbidden speech in the realm of Lashon Hara. There is Rechilos, which is innocent gossip. There is Lashon Hara, which is true, but it's negative. And then there is Motzi Shem Ra, which is a lie that's negative. Right? False and negative. So Miriam clearly was not speaking Motzi Shem Ra. But she wasn't just speaking Rechilos. She was saying something which is true, which she perceived, or they perceived, to be negative, for whatever the reasons. Right? So he says, we see from this, obviously the Pasuk is telling me, look at what happened to Miriam, a Neviah, a prophetess. She was speaking about her brother, and she was older than him. And she raised him on her knees. She risked her life to save him in the Nile River. And she didn't speak negatively about him. She wasn't purposely trying to. The day of the Rambam is that what happened was she compared him to other Nevi'im. She said, he's a Nevi, we're a Nevi, whatever. Right? He didn't mind. She wasn't offending him. He's Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? He's not offended. He doesn't need that. And even though she's his older sister, she's a prophetess, he owes her everything. She risked her life for him, and she only made a mistake. she's immediately punished with tzara'at. Kal v'chomer livnei adam ha-resha'im ha-tipshim she'marbim ledaber gdolot u'niflaot. How much more is a normal person who's stupid enough to speak Lashon Hara worthy of such consequence? We don't begin to understand the impact of speaking Lashon Hara. We don't begin to understand how much damage it does to the fabric of society, right? It's a horrible thing. By the way, where else do I find Lashon Hara in the Torah? This is interesting. Where else? Come on. Who speaks Lashon Hara and gets tzara'at? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, right, you know, they're not going to believe me. He speaks negatively about the Jewish people. He says, they're not going to believe me. They're not going to know that I came to redeem them. Why do you speak negatively about the Jewish people? How do you know? So Hashem says, put your hand in your in the breast of your shirt. Vahotziyanu, right? V'hinei yadom tzarat kashalik. And his hand had tzarat. Whatever the affliction of tzarat is. Right? Derech tzarat, says Rashi, liyot levana. The way of tzarat is to be white, because it symbolizes death. Right? Zeremez lo shalashon arasi per bromro lo yaminu. Rashi says, Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking Lashon Hara. It was an allusion to him. Hashem wants to know you just spoke Lashon Hara. Lefichach hilkeu b'tzarat. Kamosh lakta b'miriam. He's punished with tzarat, just like Miriam. Now let me ask you a question. What's the problem with tzarat? If I say something negative about Caleb here, right? So what's the problem? What's the problem with doing that? But it's true, you know? I say, I don't know, Michael. I say, Caleb's from Los Angeles. Yeah, she's from Los Angeles. That takes somebody from Los Angeles, right? Okay? So we say Caleb's from Los Angeles, and everybody here hates Los Angeles. Now we've spoken Lashon Hara. So what's the problem with that? What's the problem with that? What's the problem with that? So I said something, it's true. What's the big deal? It affects your perception. Yeah?
How are you supposed to know if it affects you?
Pardon?
How are you supposed to know that everyone doesn't like everyone else?
Well, you've changed. Well, okay, fine. So let's say I say that Caleb, I don't know, used to be a good-looking guy, now he doesn't shave, he's scruffy, right? Okay? That's not a nice thing to say, but it's true, right? Takes one to know one, right? Right? Okay. So now, you know, maybe you're thinking about hiring Caleb because you need a new PR person in your computer firm. You say, okay, I don't want a scruffy guy, forget it. So I've changed your impression of him. Right, I've given you a negative perspective of someone instead of allowing you to develop your own healthy opinion. Maybe I've embarrassed him, right? So that's a problem. So if that's the case, ask me a question on the piece of Torah I just shared with you. Moshe speaks Lashon Hara about the Jewish people. Why is that a problem? Who's he talking to? Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can't say he affected a Kadosh Baruch Hu's image or perception of Am Yisrael. He's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And nobody else is hearing this. So what's the problem there? Give me an obvious answer. Who's being affected by this? He is. Lashon Hara is not just about the other person. When you speak negatively about a person, you're affecting your perception. You're undermining your spiritual growth. So that's Lashon Hara. Okay. So if that's the case, when I get Lashon Hara, right? So I get tzara'at, and I've got this affliction, something's off balance. Here's your question. You're sitting in the Beis Medrash. You know, maybe you're late to Shir. Okay? You're late to Shir. And you come running into the Beis Medrash. Right? Okay. And you're late to Shir. And you're running into the Beis Medrash and you slam your toe into the wall. And you break your toe. Anybody ever break their toe? I broke my toe once. It's a horrible experience. It is so unbelievably painful. You know that expression, you see stars, I never understood it. I actually experienced that. It was unbelievable. I thought I was going to throw up. I thought I was going to fall. It sounds so silly, it's just a toe. I mean, like, you know, you've been in combat. What's a toe? Unbelievable. I don't know what nerves Akash Baruch Hu put in the toe, right? And I had made a mistake. I was wearing my flip-flops, whatever it was. I was running to get my son. I was late picking him up, whatever. He was a kid then. Unbelievable. I could not walk. I just sat down. You know, somebody said, are you okay? You know, what's the matter? You can't say to someone when you're in agony, I stubbed my toe. You feel like an idiot, right? You know, it's just not cool. There were five of them. They took me down, but I stubbed your toe. Unbelievable. Now, if that happens to you, so something's off balance. The toe leads the foot. It was my right toe. Where am I going in life? I don't know. Just think about something. Okay. But when all that calms down, what do you also got to do? You got to go to the doctor. Because you got a broken toe. Do you set it? Does it have nothing to do? You go to the doctor. Take an x-ray. I don't know. No, don't go to the doctor. Go to the Kohen. Oh, you have a broken... Well, let's see what's wrong with your toe. Anos Dominos Sanctimos. Let's light some incense. Why are you going to a Kohen? Go to a doctor. By the way, when I say you go to a Kohen, what does it mean that you go to a Kohen? It's not just that you go to a Kohen. It's that the person who has an affliction cannot be diagnosed as having tzaraat unless a Kohen diagnoses him. The Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam point this out very clearly, right? Sefer HaChinuch, his Lashon is really, right? One second, see if I can find it. Story of my life. Aval ha'tuma ve'atara biyad Kohen, ketzad Kohen she'ino yodea lirot. Let's say, I don't know, we're up in the Golan, and there are no Kohenim around. They all went down for Chol Moed for Birchas Kohenim. So there's only like a guy, but he's like a Baal Tshuva Kohen. He thinks he's a con. He doesn't know what he's doing. So you go over to him and say, you know, I think I got this affliction. It's a tzaraat. He goes, what's tzaraat? Ooh, what do you do? So Rav Lichtenstein is walking by. She says, oh, Baruch Hashem. So you go to Rav Lichtenstein. So Rav Lichtenstein, you know, I have this thing on my hand. Is this tzaraat? So he starts to talk about it. Oh, that's a very good question. You know, is it a seit? Is it a pachat? Maybe we have to do a suffix. Is it maret sahov? Is it amok mina krum shalabetza, whatever it is, right? So he says, well, just tell me about, oh, I can't tell you if it's a tzaraat. You need a Kohen. He says, well, only Kohen there is that guy. He's sitting in the corner there, you know, I don't know, smoking weed, and he doesn't know from Adam. Rabbi says, don't worry. So he goes over to Kohen. He says, listen, come with me. I'm going to tell you what to say, and you say it. Tell him he has vizen nega tzaraat, whatever the lashon is, and then he has tzaraat. So that's ridiculous. That is the halacha. Farish in the Rambam. What's the game? Obviously, it has to be a... Why does it have to be a Kohen? Right? Wait, first let's just lay out the question. Okay? So why does it have to be a Kohen? Right? And what are these strange symbols? The white hair and so on and so forth. Why is death such a part of this piece? So I want to share with you, right? And maybe one last question. There's a fascinating halacha that the Rambam passed based on the Gemara. What happens if it's not clear? Sometimes you look at it, it's not a nega. Sometimes you look at it, it is a nega. Sometimes it's not clear. I'll give you an example. The size of the nega has to be the size of a gris. Without going too deep into it, the gris is, Rashi told it's basically 36 hairs. It's a tiny thing. It's like the size of a thumbnail. Right? Well, what if you're looking at the grit and you're not sure if it's a gris? Because the shape is odd. Is it the Torah of a gris? So what does a Kohen say? Kohen says, okay, v'sagarat or shivayamim, you have to be closed off from society, outside of the machaneh, or stuck in your house for the next 7 days. At the end of 7 days, I'll come back and we'll look at it. If it grew, well, then we know it's tzaraat. And then you're tamei until it goes away and whatever happens, right? But if it didn't grow and it got smaller, then you don't have tzaraat. What happens if it didn't grow, but didn't get smaller? Anybody know what you do? This is what the Rambam says. I can find it. Sorry. Where's this Rambam? 1 second. Oh, it's a Perek Aleph. Second, sorry. Perek Aleph Halacha Yud. Ram says like this, right? Lo aya basera levan. If the gris didn't have a white hair in it, velo michia, yisager shivat yamim. It doesn't have all of the siman in it. It's a size, but it's not. So then he has to be closed off for 7 days. Ubashvi roehu, im no lad ba beheret sera levan, no michia, o she pashta, that it's spread, yosifa reze mechlat. Then it's clear that it's a negatarat. Lo nolad ba lo mechia, right? There's like live skin. Below sier lavan, there's no white hair. Below pastabor, it hasn't spread. Yazgir Shavua Sheni. Then he has to be closed off for another week. Now, what happens at the end of the second week if the gainer doesn't grow? What happens then? We'll take a guess. He's done. Even if it's exactly the way it was at the end of the first week, at the end of the second week, he's done. At the end of the second week, either it's definitively tzarat or he's done. Why? Why do you need this? If you have a nega, then you have a nega. Let the coin come. See, it's a nega. Why would Hashem do that? So, Sefer Achinuch quotes the Medrash and Medrash Rabbah. I want you to understand how deep this is. You're looking at a person's palm or shoulder or under his armpit or behind his neck. There's a little patch of white skin. And you're looking to see if there's a white hair. And this is beyond the purview of our discussion, but the white hair in the Torah is actually the limud in the Gemara, is it really means two hairs. Achat shem shnayim. So that has to be two white hairs. If there's only one white hair, it's not tzarat. If there's two white hairs, it's tzarat. Can you imagine? You know, there's, I don't know, you're in a yeshiva high school, and there's an 11th grader, and he's really struggling with Judaism. I don't know why we do all this stuff. And then he learns about this. Or maybe the Beis HaMikdash is built, and, you know, his dad, the Kohen, comes to the house, and he's looking at the guy, you know, he's got the microscope out, and he's looking and say, is there one white hair or two white hairs? Like, you look at the guy like he's out of his mind. One white hair, two white hairs. What does that even mean? Listen to this. This is deep. Ready for deep? Ready for deep is deep. Only one line. Ein lecha kol nima v'nima. Shelo bara la HaKadosh Baruch Hu guma. Every single hair, Hashem created a follicle to hold the hair. And that follicle was part of the fabric of creation from the dawn of time to be on your arm waiting for that hair to grow. Kedei shelo tihe achat mehen nehenet michavirta. The Medrash has a different piece in this. Every single follicle of hair has a purpose in this world. One white hair makes the difference. You ever get like who here has glasses? Some of you have glasses, right? You ever get like a hair on your glasses? And it's like annoying, but you can't quite find it because you're looking at it and you look at it and you don't see it. Imagine what it's like when the hair gets white. It's not even visible. You know? It's like you're sitting in a room and there's the guy that I go to who cuts my hair, the barber, when I can't get my wife to do it. So, you know, he has like a nice barber shop in Efrat and he's got white like tiles, marble tiles, right? So if your hair falls on the ground, you don't see it. It's very clever that he did that, right? Maybe he gets older clients. If he had younger clients, he would have a black tile, I guess. Whatever, fine. Can't see it. It's not significant in the realm of the world. But this white hair is meant to give a message to this fellow that something is seriously wrong in his life. Every single hair, every single drop of rain, it all has a purpose in this world. It's meant to teach us something. Listen to what this the Sefer Achinuch says, and then we'll finish. Sefer Achinuch, we don't know exactly who Sefer Achinuch was. We know that he was a late Rishon. We know that he wrote this book in honor of his son's bar mitzvah. It's an incredible work. You want to take on a learning project which will carry you deep into college, which will be very meaningful, I highly recommend this. It goes according to the Parshiyot HaShavua, which means if you study a mitzvah, right, it's basically a listing and a deep discussion about every mitzvah in the Torah, according to the Sefer Achinuch. Right? So obviously there's only two in Bereishit, right? And there's none in Lech Lecha, because there's no mitzvah in Lech Lecha, even though it's an important story. In Kitetze, there's like 70 plus, and so on and so forth. And for every one of those mitzvah, he has a recipe. First he says, here's what the mitzvah is. Then he says, here's the shorash, here's the deeper understanding of the mitzvah. And then he says, these are the basic laws of this mitzvah, right? Well worth a fantastic way to get a broad scope understanding of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Anyway, so he's talking about the mitzvah of tzarat, right? There is a mitzvah of tzarat. We don't think of tzarat as a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah of tzarat? What do you think? one of the 613 mitzvahs. What's the mitzvah? What do you think? Maybe to check yourself every day? What's the mitzvah? Come on. When you get tzaraat, what do you have to do? You have to go to the kohen. How does he describe this? Likvoa binyana tzaraat. One second. Shemitzvah yalena shekol mi shiyem etzara shevo al kohen lishol al tzaraato. Ve'akohen yitamenu yitarenu. V'hu yitnaheg al pi ha'torah k'tuvah kasher yitzevanu ha'kohen. There's a mitzvah, if you have tzaraat, to go to a kohen, and the kohen will tell you how to behave. And whatever the kohen tells you to do, you do. Think about how many deep ideas are included in that. First of all, you accept Torah Shabbatah. Second, you accept the authority of the kohen. And then if a kohen tells you to do something, you do it. And so on and so forth. Right? Okay. So, velo yikach ha-davar kecholi ha-bav mikreh. Part of this mitzvah, as a Sefer Chinuch, is that you shouldn't make the mistake of thinking this is just an illness. It's just a coincidence. I just banged my toe. It doesn't mean anything. No. Ela yitain leva la vieda ki godel avono garamoto. Take a moment and realize that there's something wrong. You've made mistakes in your life. There's something off balance that you need to fix, that Hashem is telling you to do. Shenemar adam ki yidem ki obsar, and he quotes the pasuk we started the shiur with. Mishorshei ha-mitzvah. Now he comes to the second part. This is what the mitzvah is all about. The root of this mitzvah. Likvoa b'nafshotenu, to set in our hearts. Ki ashgachat Hashem baruch hu pratit al kol achad. To know that Hashem is involved in each of our lives. That He watches us, that He cares about what happens to us. That's what ashgacha means. That He's looking out for us. V'chi einav p'rutot al kol darcheyem. Hashem sees everything. And that what you do makes a difference. I don't know if you remember this, but before Rosh Hashanah, one of the ideas that came up in a shiur before Rosh Hashanah is that this is Yom HaDin. Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment, justice. But it's a simcha, it's a Yom Tov. It breaks Shiva, right? So we don't say Chag Sameach, because it's a little scary being judged, but it's Yom Tov. And you're supposed to be happy. You're not allowed to, there's no avelos, there's no mourning. Why? Why are you happy on Rosh Hashanah? Because Rosh Hashanah is the day where we're judged. Rosh Hashanah is the day Hashem says that what we do matters. There's nothing more powerful than to know that what you do matters to someone that you care about. To someone who loves you, right? And he goes on. And he says, V'lacheinu z'harnu, atet lev al ha-choli ara azev al-achshov, ki achei karamato. Therefore Hashem warns us that this choli, this illness, this imbalance, is a message Hashem is giving you that something's wrong. And this normally comes about through Lashon Hara. What a gift. Now here's an interesting question. There are three types of tzaraat. Tzaraat Adam, tzaraat Abayit, tzaraat Bagadim, right? Not in that order. Now when you get to the tzaraat of houses, so the Pasuk says, I may not find this, in which case I'll just, right? The Pasuk says, Ki tavo el haaretz. When you come to the land of Israel, right? Then, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, this is in Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Sherei Noten Lachem, V'natati Nega Tzarat B'Beit Eretz Achuz Atchem. Then I give you a gift of Tzarat. That's what the Pasuk says. When you get to Israel, I'll give you Tzarat. Thank you very much. But what do you need Tzarat for? By the way, if you go into a house in Tinek, Nebuch, right? And where are you laughing? L.A., right? And there's this white blotch on the wall. It looks like mold, according to most of the Mefarshim. And you suddenly say to yourself, what if this is Tzaraat? Should you take it seriously? Do you know what the answer? If you call me up and say, listen, I just moved into this apartment. A week after I got here, it looks like there's Tzaraat on the wall. I tell you, call a plumber, it's not Tzaraat. How do I know it's not Tzaraat? Because the Pasuk says, this only occurs in Eretz Yisrael. Well, why is it only, there's no Lashon Hara in Chutz La'aretz? Trust me, unfortunately. Plenty of Lashon Hara in Chutz La'aretz. So, I thought this was the Ramban. I went looking for it this afternoon, and at the time I didn't find it. So if somebody finds it in the Ramban, I'll feel good to be vindicated. But perhaps I'm wrong. But I think I saw this many years ago in the Ramban. The Ramban says, you don't understand. Tzaraat is a gift. It's a siman ki Hashem sar me'alav. It's a siman that you've become distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Something's wrong. Now that's a gift. My father-in-law, many, many years ago, he was a radiologist. He worked in Hadassah in Karen. And every day he would take the bus, and he came back at the end of the day from the bus. He would walk up the hill to his house where they live in Yerushalayim, right? He was already in his 50s. He came here sort of later. He didn't come when he was young like I did. But he realized, like, if he doesn't come now, he's never going to get here. He wanted to watch his grandchildren grow up. And so he came. And he found a job in Hadassah as a radiologist. And he's walking up the hill to the house, and he feels like a little tightness in his chest. Now, you and I, if we felt a little tightness, we wouldn't think about it. Cramp, I was working out. But he's a radiologist, he's a doctor. And he says, I shouldn't be feeling this. Something's wrong. So he turns around that day. He doesn't go home and say, I had a funny thing, I'm going to check the doctor. He turns around and gets back on the bus and goes to the hospital. And he says, now I want you to check me out. I had a tightness in my chest. Now, normally, a guy comes in and says, it's okay, it's probably muscle. But he's a radiologist on staff. If he asks, you do it. He's a senior professor. Fine. So they check him out. Turned out that his heart needed a triple bypass, that two of his, I'm going to get the terminology incorrect, were like 87% blocked. And if he would have waited any longer, chas v'shalom. That tightness of the chest was a gift. Hashem gave him a gift. But the reason that gift was valuable was because he was sensitive enough to notice it. Now, no offense to anybody, and no one should take umbrage at this, but if you're living in schmutz, then a little bit of dirt, you don't notice it. So, Nebuch, you're living in, I don't know, Teaneck, Los Angeles, Brooklyn, right? So you're in Golis, you're in exile. It's such a mess there, we're so spiritually lower than where we need to be, that we don't even notice it. It's like if you fall asleep and you have an alarm clock, it wakes you up. But if you're, you know, in the train station and trains are coming and going, you don't even hear the alarm clock. In order to be in an environment where we can be spiritually sensitive to these messages, we have to be in such a spiritual, that's an Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So what happens? It's not clear to you. You have a sapachat, but it's not growing, but it's not going away. So the Kohen says, okay, you got to be, the Torah says, you got to be Nisgar for 7 days. 7 days you have to sit in your house. So you're stuck in your house now for 7 days, right? Right? Well, give me a nod or a no. Yeah, no, of course not. A Jew is never stuck. A Jew is sent. You now have been given a gift of 7 days. And the Kohen says, you need to do something. What do you need to do with those 7 days? If the 7 days are over and it hasn't grown, but it hasn't disappeared, you're going to have to do it again. What is it you want? What do you hope? What's the result you want at the end of 7 days? You want it to go away. You want to go back to your life. So what do? You're just waiting to see what God does? No. Something's wrong. What are you going to do about it? How can a person do something to affect the outcome of these 7 days? What do we call that? Tshuva. You got to figure out where you got off balance. How do you get back to where you're supposed to be? And if 7 days pass and you still haven't done it, he gives you another chance. But if you still didn't get it, then you're never going to get it. Why do you go a coin? Because this isn't a physical malady. This is a spiritual imbalance. And Sarat is a message for life. It's the challenge that exists in the world around us all the time. It's the broken toe. It's the plane you missed. It's the canceled flight. It's the schnitzel that wasn't there at dinner. Anytime you experience something that is off balance, there's a reason for it. And very often, we look to pin that reason on anything but ourselves. This is the continuation of the shiur we gave on Yom HaShoah. It's his fault. It's their fault. Stupid airline. This mitzvah is telling us, take a pause. Something's happening in your life. There's a reason for this. Figure it out. You might not get it right. Don't be arrogant enough to assume I will figure out the answer. But go through the process. It will be the most valuable process that you have. Because it's about you figuring out who you are and who you need to be. That is the message of Tzara'at. That's what Tazria Metzora is all about. Why do you think Tzara'at is included in the Parsha of Ishaki Tazria of Yalda Zachar? What does that have to do with having a baby? Because as soon as a child comes into the world, he begins a journey. She begins a journey. And in that journey, Hashem sends messages all the time. Are we sensitive enough to hear them? You know? This whole country is going through this tremendous challenge. Pro-reform, anti-reform, judiciary, not judiciary, terrorism in Bachutz. There's a tumult. The Medina is in chunt. There's something going on. There's something off balance. Instead of spending all this time blaming each other, why you're off balance, why I'm off balance, what do we need to work on? Why are we seeing this? What are we meant to take away? What are we meant to do? And that's this man. This man, Kai Etzman, is a chance, it's the last chance some of you may have, to really inculcate this in your life. You're in an environment which, relative to some of the environments you're going to go to, without casting aspersions, is a holy place. You're in Eretz Yisrael. You're in the old city of Yerushalayim. You're in a Beis Medrash. You're learning Torah. You're becoming more spiritually sensitive. Use this place in your life, this time in your life, to become sensitive to the messages that are around you, and decide what you're going to. Everybody here has something in their life that could be more balanced. Take the opportunity to think about it. This is the week to do that, because this is the week of Tazri Matzor. So that's a little bit of food for thought on the parasha of Tazri Matzor.